All right. Mm. Hello there, Verbal Shenanigans fans. Berlo, let's talk a little bit about some of these great sponsors that help this podcast be what it is today.
All right. Well, I guess if you want to, man. I mean, let's see if you can tell me something I should get excited about. Well,
that's a little weird, Berlo. Why are you such a Debbie Downer?
Well, you know, it's been a long week, and yeah, well, I don't know. We'll try something.
Well, you know what? You are 5-0 up in the competition. The Snag and Showdown.
I'm taking a knee the rest of the way. I'm going to win 5-0.
But you grew a little facial hair, a little lip fur.
Lip fur, yes, okay. I did.
Would you say that you were wolfing it?
I was lip wolfing it.
Well, the old lip wolf. Well, you might have been part of Wolf Nation.
Oh, on that, well, now I'm getting all excited.
Wolf Nation, wake up, live free. Our favorite sponsor here on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Ah, wolfnation.com. Wolf Nation on Instagram. Lots of apparel for kids, for women, for your homies, whoever you want. Okay. Yeah, you missed them on Christmas. Yeah, you forgot to get them a shirt. But
Scott, Valentine's Day. Women will look very nice in that stylish Wolf Nation clothing.
Martin Luther King Day.
Mm-hmm.
Valentine's Day. My birthday. Hint, hint. I could use a nice sweatshirt there.
Who are you talking to?
You. WolfNation.com.
All right.
Wake up, live free.
No doubt.
Hey, Berlo, you like movies?
Yes.
Yes. Do you like independent film?
Yes.
Do you like Don Bagnato?
I'd like to phone a friend.
Well, you know, he is the director. He's been on the show a couple times, and he's offering a great deal for Verbal Shenanigans fans. Support the arts, man. Go to Con Truth Movie to get Convenient Truth.
Mm-hmm.
Download Convenient Truth or get the DVD. $6.49. Half Jeez. Off. Half off.
Steal.
Use the promo code Shenanigans. You get $2 off. Okay? Now. All right? So get out there. Go to Con Truth Movie. That's C-O-N Truth Movie.com.
Great movie, great price, can't beat it.
All right, so your Redskins are out of the playoffs, which is awesome. Thank God, another year. If you like fantasy sports, you're like, I didn't win my league this year. Mm-hmm. It kind of sucks. You could go to DraftKings.com.
Oh, okay. That'll get me back in the football mood.
Yeah, back in the football mood. DraftKings, you know, play fantasy football. NASCAR is coming up soon. Fantasy
Can't
NASCAR,
wait.
Fantasy darts, fantasy baseball.
NBA.
Okay, every day, daily fantasy sports. Get paid out. Get win big. Okay?
Big
win big. Enter promo code Shenanigans right now and join DraftKings.com.
All right.
And finally, a big shout out to my good buddies at Trivia Revolution.
Ooh.
Trivia Revolution, located all over the state of New Jersey, we align craft beer and trivia. New Jersey craft beer.
No better combination.
To corporate beer, Berlu.
Goddamn right.
Okay. If you like trivia, look on TriviaRevolution.com. See all the different places that we're at. If you like me, which you probably don't, come down on Tuesdays to Clark Paragon Tap and Table for some good beers, some good food, and some good trivia.
Ones that they like me.
Well, that's not going to happen.
Oh.
Enjoy the podcast.
Hey, this is Michelangelo, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle here, to let you know that you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans. Oh, that's like because they're shenanigan-y and they're verbal.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Well, hello there, Mike Berlu and listeners. Oh, Dag Nasty's back. Good old Dag Nasty checking in on the podcast again. Welcome back there, brother. And we are back once again, Mike Berlu. We are at episode 90. 90 podcast. Who is calling me?
Well, it's a 90th podcast. I can only assume the president.
90 podcasts, okay. We just came off a lone episode, okay, where it was just me and you alone, no guests. Before that was Russell Davis, but tonight we got two guests.
Is it because you didn't like being around me anymore?
That is 100% why. Mm-hmm. I try to fill up the guests to keep as much time away from you as possible.
I'm so lovable.
You're not. Mm-hmm. But tonight on the show, we have a good friend of the podcast, AJ Mattioli, calling in.
Oh, okay.
If you remember AJ, AJ is a she is transgendered, or he is transgendered, and he is calling in because he started his transition as of 2 weeks ago or a week ago. So he's going to call in and give us a little update on how that works and what's going on with that. So AJ Mattioli, film director of all sorts of things, okay, a lot of LGBT films, will be calling in, giving us a little update. And Berlo, you don't have any tattoos, right?
That is correct. No tattoos, no piercings, nothing of that sort.
Well, I have one. I only have one tattoo, but you've heard of the show Ink Master, right?
Yes, I have.
Heard of the show Ink Master. Well,
Dave Navarro.
Yep, Dave Navarro's the host. We don't have him. We don't have Dave Navarro calling in.
Well, that was disappointing.
We do have one of the tattoo artists. Aaron is calling in.
Aaron is what?
I'm definitely going to ask him that. Like, you named yourself Aaron is? Like, is it going to be like, Aaron is? Like, I bet you when I send you, like, who's on, you're like, what is he talking about? Aaron is who? Aaron is what?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But Aaron is will be on, okay? So I'm pretty excited about that. So how you doing, buddy?
I can't complain. Can't complain.
Dag Nasty asks, what are we drinking? We got a Live Free or Brew Free or Die IPA.
Mm-hmm.
I got a Finest Kind IPA, Smutty Nose.
And we got a Corona coming in the future.
You can get some shitty beers on the way.
Yeah. We like to start strong and then just go shittier down the road.
And I still have a Weyerbacher Imperial Pumpkin Ale. Trying to get rid of that.
Around an hour and a half, that's when we're going to bring out the Genesee beer.
Yes, yes. You know, Genesee's like making a big comeback. Like, kids like love it. Like,
really?
Cream ales are coming back big time. And there's a couple like good breweries now that are making really good cream ales. But Genesee's like, you know, like PBR and like Brooklyn and all that.
Old school. PBR.
Woo! You know, like now it's like Genesee cream ale is like pretty up there again.
Really?
It's interesting.
I bought it once just because I didn't have a lot of bucks. And it wasn't half bad, but it's not something I'm like, oh, dude.
No,
if you don't have the Genesee at the party, ain't showing up.
As far as cheap beers, it's definitely not the worst. Mm-hmm. Okay? The worst is probably to me Coors Light is just the worst beer.
I can't say
other
it's
than
the
like
worst
Steel
beer.
Reserve or something like that, or like when you get into the big 40s and King Cobra and all that shit.
I can't say it's the worst just because I mean it's not nasty tasting. It's just
it's
nothing.
Water.
I mean, Budweiser, I get like a little aftertaste with that. I would put that in my bottom.
Those of you on Periscope, what do you think the least favorite beer you've ever had is? Let's see if they respond. But Michael Burley is obsessed with being on the camera. You know, maybe next time we'll put it right in your face.
Then everybody will love the show.
Yes. But so we are back. Let's just get some show news out of the way. February 21st, Burley. February 21st coming quick, okay?
Yes.
Only about a month away, a little over a month away. That is the fourth Verbal Shenanigans comedy show. They said Milwaukee's best. I have to agree with you there.
Yeah, that's a good call.
Pretty bad. Thank you, Dag Nasty.
Milwaukee's best light.
Ooh. In college, we had a lot of Busch Light. It was like $11 for a 30.
Mm-hmm.
Busch Light wasn't great.
It's still manageable.
Yeah, it's not terrible.
Yeah.
So February 21st, the Verbal Shenanigans comedy show, that is in Table 42 at Dover, New Jersey, and you have some great acts on there. You got guesting will be Jackie Byrne,
mm-hmm. Okay. Funny lady,
very funny lady. Featuring is a very funny Joe Conte, who headlines all over the place,
mm-hmm.
And then headliner, God willing, his flight works out. He will be headlining. That is Mark Riccadonna, who writes for Weekend Update.
Oh, wow.
Weekend Update.
Our second Weekend Update person.
Second Weekend Update? Who do you have?
Well, Liam was on the podcast.
Oh, Liam, yes. But he was Weekend Update?
Yeah, he wrote some stuff for Weekend Update, according to his site.
Oh,
unless
there we go. We're all over
Weekend
Update.
Unless he's messing with me. I'm so be pissed off he's messing with me.
But, so that's February 21st. Now, as far as tickets, it's $35 for dinner and the show, so please come on out. It's a Sunday night. Football's over. Valentine's Day's over. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, you can get your girl tickets to the show.
Oh.
Bring them on out.
Well, that would be a lovely suggestion.
I know. So bring them on out for dinner and all that fun stuff, and come on out for a good night of comedy.
What if she tells me no?
I don't know. All right, Berlo. Now, this guy has been on Ink Master on Ooh. Spike TV. I believe he's been on 2 seasons, actually.
Really? Well, he was on Rival.
Rivals, yes. He got pretty far, too. He got close to the end. He goes by the name of Aaron Iz. Okay, he has a couple tattoo shops, does some amazing work. So let's give him a call.
Let's do it.
Living room. Oh, Zoom is on. It zoomed in on me.
Oh, yeah, it did zoom on you. I could see you beautifully.
Oh, good. In my whole goddamn ugly living room.
Wow, you're like, you got the whole setup going, and you can see him. But Aaron Iz, welcome to Verbal Shenanigans. Thanks so much for joining us for a few minutes, man.
How you doing?
All right, man. So welcome to the show. And
move. Follow me. Look at it.
Whoa. Brother, you can't see, but what do you have on? Like a cam that follows you around?
No, it's my fucking Xbox Kinect.
Oh. He's like walking around the room and it's following him.
Ooh.
That's so weird. Look at this, Frank.
We should get that for you, Berlo.
Yeah. Yeah. I move around a lot. I'll be very entertaining.
Look at this. Wait, watch. I go like this. It's like trying to find my face.
Yeah, it zooms in and out, bro.
Alright, sorry.
Oh yeah, no problem. I would be playing.
I've never used it before.
I didn't even think of the Kinect doing Skype. Ooh. That's how
it's brilliant. You sit on your. You could do this. I think you can do this while you're playing games and while you're fucking
tattooing,
watching TV and shit too.
You could do it while you're tattooing, possibly.
Yeah, it would probably work if I was tattooing in my living room.
Extreme close up. Whoa!
But anyway,
yeah, we never do on the books.
So, Aaron, you we got a lot of talk about here. Aaron, you've been – I mean, we could start at the beginning. We could start wherever. But so you are, I guess you could say, not only just a tattoo artist. Nowadays, you know, you look your name up, you're kind of all over the place. Your work is – like I found your work all over the place, Instagram, Facebook, all over the web. That's got to feel
– the web stuff's cool. Like when it's on there and I didn't put it there, that's when you start realizing you're kind of – you feel a little more important when it's not like my own social media is pretty easy to find and there's shit all over that I posted. But when I find my own shit on Google, it's kind of exciting.
Like stuff that you didn't take pictures of.
Sure. Yeah. Or is my stuff reposted or retagged and they just shows up.
That's awesome.
They can't see it's a radio thing.
I mean, I could see.
Describe it to me, Scott.
Hello. How are you? Oh, actually, I'm not on video. I could put myself on video if you'd like.
That's Coco. That's my girlfriend, Coco.
Hey, you're the one I talked to on email.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. She's the one that manages my life.
That's awesome. So, Aaron, you've been tattooing, obviously, for quite a long time. I would guess. I mean, I read in your profile at one point on when you were an Ink Master, it said like 16 years, but it's been a couple years since then, so probably about 20 years now?
Well, no, I think I'm pushing 18, I think. I'm 17 and a half, I think, in... Well, I go by year just because I don't remember the month. So I guess since we're in 2016, I'm 18, I think.
18 years of tattooing.
Your tattoos can go to a strip club now.
Yes, your tattoos are old enough to go to a strip club.
Yeah. Or be strippers.
Yes.
Yeah, or be strippers and buy cigarettes.
And I'm sure your tattoos are on many strippers also.
Yeah.
So you're starting to make a name for yourself, whether it was the TV exposure and whatnot, but in the end it is the art of tattooing. It's you and the person that trust you enough to put the whatever artwork they want on them. Is it kind of weird having people like us contact you to do an interview about it or a TV show about tattooing? Or is it is it really like appreciated? Like, look how far tattooing's come.
Well, it's a mix. It's like when I was a kid, I was telling her when we met that, like, as a kid, I always wanted to be on TV just because who doesn't? Mm-hmm. And I've always been that kind of ham, that dickhead that just always wanted to be not so much like rich and famous, but just known and famous and be in front of the camera. And then I started tattooing, and then I kind of faded because when I started tattooing, that wasn't a thing. Like, it was still, we still got. Shrugged out at the gas station, and it was still like, moms didn't come in the tattoo shop with their strollers. So it wasn't a thing that, like, okay, now I'm in this business, I'm never going to make it on TV unless I'm a criminal somewhere.
Right. Yeah, go ahead, Joe.
I'm just wondering, before even like getting into tattooing, what was your background when you were growing up? Were you into like museum art? Were you just like doodle on your notebooks? So where did you get your love for art?
All of the above. I think I've been drawing and painting since I could hold a pencil. So I was trading fucking anti-racism drawings in high school for candy bars. Like I would draw a KKK member hanging from a noose and trade it to my buddies for candy bars that they stole from the gas station.
That is one of the most interesting exchanges I've ever heard. Anti-racism things for candy bars.
That works in Cuba.
And snakes. Actually, I think the one I did with the noose was traded to a weird hillbilly kid. And this is the way the irony is. It was a KKK guy hanging from a noose. I traded to a hillbilly for a snake he found in his yard.
That's quite the...
And the next month, eBay was born.
Right?
I trade drawings, anti-racism drawings for snakes and candy bars.
Daddy, look what I got. Son, where's old snake at?
It's true. That's how fucked up that is. That's actually true.
Yeah, that sounds like, you know, you're doing peyote and you're like, yeah, one day I traded my tattoos work for snakes. You know, but
I started drawing for friends that were getting tattoo work before I even thought about doing it myself. And I'd gotten two tattoos before I even considered doing it myself. And I just met a guy, and I think it was 98, and he moved to Florida. I met my cousin. My cousin thought he would be an interesting person to introduce me to. We became fast friends. He moved in with me, and he one day was like, after seeing my drawing portfolio, said, "You should tattoo." And I said, "Okay." And that was pretty much it.
So I'm sure you get this question all the time. What was your first tattoo?
The one I ever got or the first one I ever did?
Yeah, both. First you got, first you did.
All right, the first one I got was a shitty fucking tribal bullshit drawing I had done on my spine in my friend's bedroom with a race car motor tattoo machine.
Okay. Wait, so it was tribal, a tattoo machine, and a race car motor.
It was like at the beginnings in like the mid-90s when like, it was like tribal and kanji was just starting to come out, and I was first going out to my first nightclubs, and I was going out dancing, and I didn't drink or anything, and I'm looking at all these people and smelling clove cigarettes and incense and there's smoke machines, and I'm loving the whole environment, and there's always these people around. Every once in a while, I'd see like a really hot girl with like a little like kanji symbol in the middle of her shoulder blades or a tribal bit, and this dude, I'm like, I want something between my shoulder blades, it looks really cool, so I drew this fucking thing up. And then me and like four of their friends got it done, and two of them fucked up the design because they couldn't find it. So they got another fucked up rendition of it that another friend drew that was wrong. Tony, the guy that put it on my back, redrew it for himself and another friend, and it was different. It was a whole mess because I was like, the best 1995.
Yeah, the best thing about tattooing is to get 23 people involved. Mm-hmm. Those are the best ones that come out.
We call them butt buddy tattoos.
All right, so how about the first one you did? Now, were you drawing a lot? Were you learning the machines first, or was it one of those like classic, like, oh, I just did it at a party with my buddies and traded for snakes?
that came later. The guy that I met that moved in with me that decided he wanted to teach me, we got through all this training and we went through, and he was really OCD, so luckily for me, it was more fine-tuned on cross-contamination and cleanliness and sterility, so I learned a lot about doing the shit right before I actually picked up a machine. And when I did, it was just me tattooing myself in a chair in my living room.
Really? Mm. So you tattooed yourself was the first one you did?
My first one. And anybody I've ever trained or apprenticed, I made them their first tattoo. And I always endorse this. If you're going to learn how to tattoo, the first tattoo you do is on yourself because you learn a lot about what you're doing physically and technically to the skin. And then when you can feel it at the same time, it gives you more of a clear understanding of what you're actually doing.
Huh. Now, is anybody, after they've done their own tattoo, you're like, you know what, kid? This is the wrong business for you. You might want to go into accounting.
Enjoy your tattoo.
Bullshit. The reason I think that apprenticeship should be a year to 2 years is because you don't know that on the first one. There's no way you can know that.
I was going to ask you, the apprenticeship, like, you know, I watch a couple of those shows here and there, and they describe, you know, it's pretty intense. Is that how yours was?
Mine was completely fucked up. The guy that taught me ended up being a quadpolar drug addict alcoholic. So,
quadpolar.
He wasn't just bipolar. I know people that are bipolar. He was far beyond that.
He's the guy that traded things for candy bars, snakes, tattoos.
Oh, he was the guy. He was the guy that would make me smoke weed out of a fucking pipe that was shaped like a turd, and then try and teach me how to tattoo, and then go shoot guns off in the parking lot.
Now,
bullshit. I don't do drugs, and that was the only time I ever got into anything, and it was just weed. And I just, I don't remember about 2 months of that apprenticeship, so I stopped and figured I should probably start learning.
Now, can you give us his name so we can have him on the podcast next week?
Scott for 200 points on the Shenanigans Showdown.
He's actually, you know, it's funny. He emailed me about a month ago, and I have yet to email him back. And it was, I mean, honestly, it was 1998 when this happened, and I give him a lot of credit for why I'm where I'm at because he was the beginning of it. He was a fucking lunatic, and then we had a falling out, and I went on my own and did great, and he didn't because I don't know where the hell he's at. But he wanted to like email me this long, like emotional email about how it meant so much, and he was so happy and proud that I've done what I've done, blah, blah, blah. And I just don't know what to write back, so it's right. Still in my inbox.
Now, you start tattooing, and I'm guessing you worked at a whole bunch of different places. And when did you get your first when did you get your first shop?
Well, the first place I actually worked, don't tattoo out of your house. Anyone listening, don't tattoo out of your house. You're only as clean as you, your environment and what you know. And if you're teaching yourself in your house, you're never going to do anything right. You just don't have the right influence.
Okay.
But
so
in the '90s, I'm in Tampa. So I was going to Ybor City. I was friends with a lot of local tattooers. I was getting good tips. I was bringing my stuff to shops to have it sterilized. Cause in the '90s, it wasn't so frowned upon to tattoo at home if you had the right kind of setup. So I actually, when I bought my first house, I had this house has since been demolished, but it was like an oddly shaped double shotgun thing that was bridged in the middle. It was really weird. And the extra we had, I rebuilt the entire room, tiled it, had stainless steel countertops, and made it into a studio. So I had a separate room in my home that, because I wasn't doing it full time, I was working full time at another job as a managing a restaurant. Look, I zoomed this in really close.
Yeah, I was just going to say, watching you is like, it's almost like I just saw The Revenant this week, and it did all those tracking shots that like follow.
Yeah, it's like I got a cameraman in those. Yeah.
It did all these tracking shots that follow. So like it's moving left, right. It's zooming. It's like,
zoom in.
I'm getting a little nauseous.
Anyways, but yeah, so I did that, and I did that for a couple of years. I had advice from the people that I trusted, and I was in Ybor all the time because I worked at a restaurant in Ybor where all the tattoo shops were.
Okay.
So after becoming friends with a few guys there that were other influences of mine, I did that for a while, and we moved, we did this, and I met a guy that worked in Ybor as well that was talking about opening a shop up.
Okay.
That's the first shop that I worked at. It's a long way around to get to that. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
But yeah, so we got it. It was a terrible fucking name because his original partner that was like three of us decided, Cody, the guy that did my neck. I love Cody. He said they decided on Kid Pain Tattoos. And first thing I said was, that's the worst fucking name of a shop I've ever heard of. But I was young and excited and motivated. So I was like, fuck it, it's not mine. Let's do it. And that's what turned into my first spot, which eventually, after almost, 10 years, turned into my store that I bought from him and changed the name and then rebranded everything.
Right. So now you have, I looked at
hold on, this is funny. Hold on. You go ahead. Go ahead.
So now you have several tattoo shops right now you're showing
a photo from 2003 from that shop.
Wow, you guys look like kind of like that's the 90s version of the Ramones.
Yeah, that's the original group of assholes that ran that shop in St. Pete, Florida. I found this the other day and hung it on my wall.
Wait, hold. Put that up again. Which one's you?
Really?
I couldn't see real quick. Oh, there you are.
with the hot dude sunglasses. What are you talking about?
Yeah, dude, you're awesome. I mean, between that and your tribal tattoo, awesome.
It's almost gone.
Now, so you start working and whatnot, and obviously you're probably getting better and better and better as you know, you keep doing work and whatnot. But
a lot slower rate than they do now. The technology and the advancements that we and the new kids have now is, in the 90s, we had nothing. We didn't have Google. We had physical books for reference. We had to draw everything. We did lettering out of books freehand. We didn't use Photoshop. You know, people didn't come in and show us our cell phones and Pinterest bullshit. We had to create everything we did. So the learning curve was a lot longer. So we spent – and what took me 10 years to get to a point where I felt like I was doing good work kids are doing now in two. Wow.
If I'm not mistaken, having like the needles and the guns change a lot too, faster.
Machines. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So.
Yes. Wizards and guys that work at the flea market call them guns.
Well, I'm a wizard, and the way life is going, I may be working at a flea market soon. So,
or like I said, or wizards that work in flea markets.
Now you're on to something.
Like, what was the 90s scene like with tattoos? I mean, was there still a ton of people going out there to get there? I was still remembering times where people were saying, oh, like, AIDS would, like, survive in the ink of tattoos back in the 90s.
Oh, yeah, scene. We had all kinds of weird bullshit scares, and... It was hepatitis was a huge fear, and everybody thought they'd get herpes from getting tattooed, and it was a fucking nightmare. But everything was revolved around fucking tribal, kanji, and just weird new school sacred hearts. It was absurd. Remember that fucking bullshit?
Now,
Aaron, you weren't a good tattooer if you couldn't do a badass sacred heart tattoo in a new school. A fucking goofy koi. I used to call my koi fish penis kois because everybody wanted a new school koi fish or a sacred heart.
Yeah, what was it with the koi fish? Like, and still nowadays, I still get friends like, oh, I think I'm about getting a koi. Like, what?
Obsession with Japanese them? Design, which will never be out of style, but every different style that comes into play adapts the original long-lasting style so that they think it's going to give their tattoos longevity because kois will never be out of style, but new school kois sure as fuck are.
Now, Aaron, how would you describe your personal style? I know that's kind of like a hard question to ask people, but I've seen you've been doing online. You're doing a lot of stuff with like sacred geometry and dotting and stuff. But according to the website or whatever, it says you've started to do that more in recent years. Like, how would you describe yourself as a tattooer?
Right now. I mean, I'm well-rounded enough where I can do a lot of different styles, but my favorites are photorealism, portrait work, and the dot work and sacred geometry. And that's pretty much where I'd like to kind of fine-tune. And what happens after, like, 10 to 15 years is you start to funnel yourself into a specific forte. So people are coming to me not for that sweet geisha they saw on Google. They're coming to me for what I'm already doing and what they like. The dot work, the sacred geometry, and... portrait work, which I just dabbled into back again because I haven't done it in a while, and I did a couple of really rad portraits last week actually that I posted. It was pretty cool.
When you get customers that come in, are they mostly, do they have an idea what they want, or they give you the freedom to say, I like something you did here, maybe something different from that or off of that shoot?
Well, normally up until the last few years, it's always they have an idea and they want to do my take on it. Now, more than not, I've got people sending me emails for appointment requests with reference photos that are all my work.
Wow.
So they're resending me emails with eight photos of stuff. I want something like this, and they're all my tattoos. And then they go, here's my arm, and here's my money. And then I tattoo them.
Yeah. I see. I have one tattoo on my arm. I don't have a lot of experience, but I kind of did that with my artist. I saw her work. I loved it. I gave her, like, three concepts I like, and I said, here, go to, you know, she gave me a rough idea, and I just let her do it, and I put my faith in it. I love it, you know, like, I think sometimes if you really, you see the artist's work and their vision, I really think the tattoos sometimes come out better if you trust the artist and let them do
all
what works. All the time?
There's a reason why, like, this is considered, I think, for me, more of a fine art, because if I wanted to do a job that someone else told me to do exactly to spec, I would be a commercial artist and work for Bleach. or Bic Pens or fucking Valpak. But this is a thing that, like, if you want the best art from your tattooer, give them an idea, give them a concept, and let them do what they want, because we're going to have more passion and drive doing something that we are looking forward to showing off than we would if you came in and said, I want this. I know you're good at tattooing, but this is what I want. And I go, I could do that, or you could use your money wisely and let me do something I'm really, really skilled at and something I'm really passionate about and get a better piece from it.
Yeah, that trust is like everything, though. Like, I feel like that trust is the difference between a 100% original artist tattoo and some kind of like conglomerate of something else, you know? Like,
well, imagine that concept, and imagine this is the way that I work. People are like, well, I like this, and this you've done, and I want this part of my body done. And they say, okay, when you draw it up, you know, let me know and I'll let you know. And I go, no, And like, what do you mean? I said, well, I don't do that. Like, what are you saying? Every tattoo that I do, for the probably 99% of the time, I don't pre-plan. I haven't drawn in advance for a client in probably over 12 years.
Okay.
Everything that I do, from a full sleeve to a full rib piece, anything, is I do it and create it and build the composition on the spot while I'm doing it, as if I'm painting.
I like that.
A new client doesn't know how to grasp that. They're like, what do you mean? I don't know. I'm not going to see what I'm going to get. I'm like, nope.
I just like that concept, though, going in there. Listen, I like horseshoes. I like buttermilk. I like surfing. And I have an ass. Go to it.
I know a wizard at the local flea market that is perfect for you.
So, Aaron, first off, Aaron is. Where does that name come from?
It was a joke, kind of. My first interview I did was for Savage Magazine.
Okay.
And it was, I got picked up at my first, one of my first bigger conventions was the actual first Baltimore convention. And by the end of the weekend, Scott Russo, who was one of the main editors of Savage Magazine, walked by me and saw my stuff. And I just started dabbling into portrait work. And it was right at the very beginning of like color portrait stuff, that whole movement with like Brandon Bond and Nico Hurtado and a bunch of other guys that do the full color, like the zombie stuff was really huge back then, like the early 2000s. And I did full color portraits all weekend. I did Gandhi, I did all this stuff, and I had a blast. It was one of my busiest weekends at a convention because I was still kind of young in the convention circuit. And he wanted to do an interview and wanted to do a full spread. So it was my first actual spread. So I was stoked. And that was it. It was like, what the fuck was I talking about? Oh, my name. My name. I'm like, why am I going with this? There's so many different reasons why I tell that story. And that's it's the name is I had to do an interview. And the interview was like, well, where did Aaron Is come from? I think I started saying it as a joke at the shop because when I came up, Aaron Kane was a big name. And he's an amazing tattooer and he's an amazing machine builder. And there's a couple other Aarons that I knew of when I was coming up in the 90s and the early 2000s. I'm like, well, I can't do my last name because it sucks. So, and if I do just Aaron, no one's gonna know who the fuck I am. So I said, well, if I do Aaron Is and put a couple ellipses behind it, because that's kind of how I type everything. I put dots between everything for pausing because I want you to read an actual pause instead of a coma because I'm retarded. Comma, yeah. But it was like Aaron Is, yeah, or come, whatever you want, all over the place. It was like... I don't know what kind of audience you guys have. I'm sorry, I'm an asshole.
Oh no, but that's our audience. They love our audience are the wizards at the flea market and the guys trading things for snakes and like
assholes,
that.
All three.
Well, don't give him my email.
Oh,
but let me tell you,
the name was like, all right, Aaron is ... and let everyone make up the whatever the fuck they want to put at the end of it. And if you've had a great experience with me, then Aaron is awesome. Aaron is a good tattooer. Aaron looks great in tight pants. Aaron.
He does. He does. Up.
So I like. You seen the stupid fucking pictures with the damn red pants?
Yes.
Terrible. Terrible. But that's another story. Remind me about that story on set. That's a really funny one. But the thing was like, they did this interview and they said, where did they come from? I said, just that. I said, Aaron is whatever you want it to be, whatever you think it is, whatever you feel about me. So it makes it kind of more fun and it's easy to remember and people will think it's kind of a kitschy thing and it might work for marketing. And in the interview, I was like, Aaron's going to do this. Aaron's awesome. Aaron's going to lend me money to buy my own spaceship. And they printed all that. So after that, it was stuck. Another really funny part about the name bullshit is we were in Tennessee for Josh Woods' opening party. We went to do karaoke. I wrote Aaron Is on a fucking paper to do a song. And the fucking DJ was like, and Aaron 15 is up for the next show.
Yes. It's like the old Penn 15 club in school.
I told that joke to a fucking guy, somebody else writing an article for another magazine that happened a couple years later. And then my name was Aaron 15 for like six different spreads because they thought that was what it was,
That's not great.
An S.
That's great.
His cousin was Johnny 5.
It was funny. Right? It was funny. I was texting Mike here, the co-host, and I was like, you know, Aaron is coming on the show. He's like, Aaron is what? You know, like, Aaron, you know, like, no, I'm like, Aaron is. It was like, you know, who's on first? Like the old Abbott and Costello bit, you know?
It was really funny, though. It was never meant to be verbal. And I've got people that have, like, that I've known for years that introduced me to their friends as Aaron Is. I'm like, it's just fucking Aaron. You know, we have friends that say that shit, like, at conventions. Like, oh, this is Aaron Is. I'm like, no, I'm Aaron.
That's because they don't know your real last name.
Well, I get it, but no one would need to say my last name anyways.
Right.
Like, this is Coco. This is Frank. This is Michael. This is Phil. This is Aaron. Not this is Aaron is. So it's funny as fuck when people say it out loud. I'm like, why are you saying it like that? Just say Aaron. It was for print media because it looks cool and it makes people think.
Right. All right, Aaron, let's talk. I don't want to talk a lot about Ink Master, but let's talk a little bit about it. Okay. How did you get recruited onto that show or turned onto that show?
It had to do with tattooing.
It might have. Or they just saw me at a fucking bar one night. I have no idea. But I went to a casting call for season 3.
Okay.
They all but said, go fuck yourself, and then I left.
All right.
I mean, without that, so many words. They're like, cool, thanks for stopping by. Hope you enjoyed your parking fee outside. And then the next year, they found me at a convention with another friend of mine, and the casting agent was up our asses all weekend, loved our dynamic, thought we were funny as hell, thought we had good personality for television. I told her the story. I said, listen, I've already done this bullshit. I'm not doing a casting call. If you guys really want me for this nonsense, then you will set me up an interview, and we'll skip the casting call bullshit, because then I'm just doing the same shit I did last time, and nobody cares about that.
Right.
So they did. They sent me for an interview. I went down to the fucking studio in New York. I sat in a little office studio, did a live interview, recorded everything, never another fucking word again.
Okay.
That was for season 4. And then about a year later, whatever the season in between time passes where they're casting again, I was sitting on an airplane going to convention overseas, and they called me and they said, hey, do you want to be on TV? And I was like, well, what do you mean? They're like, well, this is so-and-so from casting for Ink Master. I said, well, I've talked to you guys before, and you guys didn't. You told me eat shit. You don't want me then. What's the difference now? She's like, well, I don't know anything about that, but we want to use you now.
Hmm.
And that's the start of the casting process.
Now, you know, like I watched the show. I watched it maybe a season or two. I haven't watched them all, but I actually did watch the season you were on. And
that's the only one I watched.
Now, I don't want to go into like what was the experience like? Well, was it real? Was it no? But was Ink Master a positive experience, or was it a something that both had pros and cons?
Well, it did have pros and cons, but all in all, I put this: we were sequestered, of course. So once the 8 months of casting fucking fiery hoops of bullshit were done,
whoa!
what just occurred there?
My roommate's cell phone, sorry.
Was that Yoda?
Yeah. Once all that was done and I got the call, finally, I have a lot of funny stories, but I'm very long-winded, so I'll try and... How long is this thing anyway?
We got about like 10 minutes left or something. We don't want to keep you all night.
The shoot was amazing. It was taxing. It was tiresome. It was 4 a.m. wake-up calls.
Okay.
15-hour days. It was crazy shit. I learned a lot about TV production.
Right.
I learned a lot about my own skill sets. I learned a lot about other tattooers that I knew of but didn't know personally, and I grew very close to a lot of people that I wouldn't have been able to do so outside of the situation. So it was like,
all right, that's definitely
the
positive.
Two things, like going to battle together as tattooers, like if this is the tattoo industry's Vietnam or like boot camp and we're preparing ourselves for war. So when you do this, we always laugh because before you're ever a part of this bullshit, and a lot of tattooers, of course, aren't because there's thousands of us.
Right.
And I always look at the group of the Ink Masters and the TV people from other shows and all this other stuff, and I'd watch them from a distance. I'm like, these fuckers are all just too cool for everyone else, and they always seem to have a clique, and they always seem to be together, and they're way too cool for everybody else. And then when you do it, you realize it's not that at all. It's a very, very loving camaraderie where you guys have gone through this fucking terror together.
Right.
And it creates a bond. And when you're part of that bond, you understand it, and you're like, fuck. I was judging these assholes before I ever did it, and it's not that way at all. Because you do. I'm taking pictures with Longnecker and James Vaughn and Jimmy Litwalk this weekend, and it's because we're friends and we went through the same battle together. Yeah. And I'm sure there's people across the hallway doing their tattoos, looking up, going, "These fucking assholes trying to be cool." And I did the same thing, but I didn't realize what it was until I actually did it. It was crazy.
It's funny you say that because we had Brian Duffy and Russell Davis from Bar Rescue on. We had both of them on. And Chef Brian Duffy. They were We had both of them.
I know Brian Duffy from fucking. Isn't that Brian Duffy from Dublin? I know a tattooer named Brian Duffy.
No, he's not. He's a chef. But we had both of them on from Bar Rescue, which they kind of had similar things to say. Like, you know, there was these positive, but they met so many committed people through it. And you know, you see these guys on TV, and it's like, oh, it's TV. And they told us like kind of what was real about it and what. What you know is it's fabricated about it, but They also said it had a lot of positives too. And you know, the reason I bring that up is because it's on the same network and kind of a you know, different type of show. But they're, you know, they're saying they're working together for very long days on production and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting that you said kind of like a, you know,
and we heard about the seclusion from like Arnold Mintz and James Krause and their reality show.
Crazy.
So
I mean, we were in the same building for 2 fucking months.
Ugh.
Oh, it was 2 months, huh?
Well, basically, it's this: it's as long as you last, more or less. So, if you went, like I did, top 6 out of 18, so I only missed 2 shoots.
Okay.
So, wow. So I missed 2 shoots out of the entire shoot, and that put me there for a month and 3/4 ish. So I missed like 4 days. No, like 6 days of shooting out of the entire thing. So, and watching everyone go home every couple of days, because we shoot an episode in 3 days. So every 3 days, you're saying goodbye to someone that you just got to know and got close with.
Hmm.
And we would have emotional fucking things at the end of the day when like somebody you just bonded with for the last, you know, 8 weeks is going home and you're like, fuck, dude, that sucks. It's that, like, means I'm drinking alone tomorrow night.
Yeah, it's like summer camp. You know, when your buddy's got, he can only do, you know, 1 week less than you. He's got to go home. Yeah.
You better write me.
But, I mean, I'm not blowing smoke up your ass, but I did think a lot of your work was freaking really awesome on the show. And in fact,
I have two favorites that I did.
Okay.
And out of all the work was there, most of it was out of my, not so much comfort zone, but out of my
style.
It's not my favorite things to do. Like right. No one comes to me for traditional Japanese work because that's not what I've studied. That's not what I know well, and that's not what I do.
Okay.
So why would you go to a guy that does dot work or portrait work to do a Japanese dragon? You fucking don't. But when you're doing it as a challenge, you got to pull out all the stops and do what you can. So there's a few pieces I'm like, just not like, don't ever put, and they're all over the fucking internet, but like, don't, like, that's not me, you know what I mean?
Right.
And luckily I got to do a couple that were me, so I've gotten a lot of pull and draw for my stuff that they liked on the show, which I got lucky because a lot of guys don't get to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I thought you were definitely good. I mean, and then I looked up your work more, obviously, when I was trying to get, like we said, this show kind of, we just focus on like different people who are passionate about different things. We've had like guys who were attacked by a hippo, and we've had a sumo wrestler on, and you know, I was trying to get a tattoo artist on. I said, okay, let's look around, and I found you, and I looked up your work once we responded. I'm like, you know, you got a lot of cool stuff out there. Like, that dot stuff seems so hard, but it looks so cool at the end, you know?
It's a lot easier than it may look at times, and some guys will look at it and think that it's too tedious, and a lot of artists won't touch it.
So you're saying Berlu can do it. So you're saying Mike here can do it if he really right. put his mind into
Scott,
it.
Scott, I got a needle right here. Let's
do it on
it.
Your leg.
No. we're a team. I got to start with you, man.
I'd like to see the finished product.
So now real quick, Aaron, you have a lot of shops all over the place, right? You have different things?
Just the one with my good friend, family member. I call my brother. It's been my partner in Ybor City. We have a little small little shop, and we work our asses off, and we have a good time.
Oh, that's in – where's that located?
Tampa, Florida.
Oh, okay. So you have nothing in Pennsylvania, right?
Well, I mean, Troy Temple is one of the most pinnacle people in the entire tattoo community. He runs 11 of the best conventions in the entire circuit. And he's based in Philadelphia. I've been friends with him for many years, and I do all of his shows. And when I go to Philadelphia, I work at the famous Philadelphia Eddie's. That's my guest spot, my second home.
Oh, nice.
I've got a lot of shops everywhere that I call home, but okay. My own personal shop is in Tampa.
So as far as currently, like, what kind of projects are you doing? Anything currently going on where people can check out? Where can people go to see you?
I'm in Florida for about a week and a half, and I'm in Austin, Texas for the Tattoo Arts Revival, the Austin Tattoo Convention coming up in like a week and a half. I do the convention circuit regularly, so I'm in all kinds of cities. We just came back from Minneapolis, like, yesterday.
Okay.
I've done shit in Europe. I've done shit all over the East Coast. I've done Texas, California. So conventions and guest spots all over the country and all over the world, really. And I've got some painting projects going on right now, one for a dog rescue in New Orleans.
Hey, we might be doing a podcast or a comedy show for a bear rescue wildlife sanctuary. I'm really pumped up about it. So
shit, it's awesome.
If it does happen, I'll let you know. You know, maybe we could, I don't know. Yeah. Who knows? think of something artistic to do. I don't know.
Absolutely. I think I'm doing a small painting for that, for like an art. It's like a, I think it's a raffle or a, whatever the hell they call it.
Silent auction.
Silent auction. Yeah. For the fundraiser. It's going to be really cool.
Yeah. I even saw on your Twitter how you talked about how you've rescued kitties on the side as well.
That's actually true. I've rescued a couple kitties.
Like kitty, kitties or cats?
I have. I crawled in a 2-inch diameter concrete drain tube under a 6-lane highway to save a fucking kitten that fell in the storm drain.
Wow.
That's great.
No bullshit. And it's funny because it started off with here, kitty, kitty. And then about halfway through, I was like, don't move, you motherfucker. And then to the end of it, I said, I'm going to fucking kill you by the time I get to the end of this tunnel. See, and then we ended up saving the kitty.
Okay, that's not really rescuing. Yeah. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Well, I saved him. I just was a little bit more frustrated when I finally got to the little son of a bitch because he wouldn't come to the other side. And after crawling underneath all 6 lanes, I was a bit irritated.
Yeah. See, I'm a huge animal lover, and I was on the side of rescuing cats. I still am, but me and cats are having a little problem. I was bit by my ex-wife's cats the other day when I was trying to get rid of her cats out of my house, and I ended up in the emergency room getting a goddamn tetanus shot. So me and cats are a little bit, I don't know, what's the word? We're ornery towards each other? We're at a stand?
You're frenemies.
But yeah, you know, I like you rescuing them and all that stuff, but...
I've always done that shit. I've saved 2 alligators, too, from, like, roadways and shit.
That's awesome.
Well, he was in the sewers anyway, so...
Aaron, go ahead, brother. One more question.
I got one more question. Now, Scott talked about he has one tattoo. I'm kind of straight edge in the sense that I don't have any tattoos or piercings. In your opinion, can anybody pull off a tattoo, or are there just some people just got to stay...
As far as wearing one, you mean?
Yes.
That's up to you. Get the fuck out of here. I think so. I think it depends on whether or not. No, yeah, of course. You know why? Because the tattoos, sure, if you show it off, it's for whoever sees it, but you're getting it ultimately for yourself. So if you get a tattoo by someone you trust and it's something you love and it comes out the way you want it to and you're happy, then you're wearing it right. Like there's no, and other than that, it's someone else's opinion that's influencing you anyways.
All right. Well,
so if you love it, then fuck everybody else. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's cool, man. I know I get a trainer one because it's a part of our little game here on Verbal Shenanigans. I have to get a hentai tramp stamp.
No, a henna. Henna. You have to get a henna.
I think no bullshit. A hentai tramp stamp would be a lot.
I was gonna say hentai. That's getting a little weird, bro. That's not the audience.
I got Goku.
Hentai Bukkake combination.
Yeah, I was gonna say hentai, bro. That's getting a different audience involved. Real quick, I actually thought it could. You know, you're obviously covered in ink and whatnot. It's probably a cheesy question, but when you start running out of room, do the tattoos become more like this better be like the best one I have because I'm running out of room and I can't add them up, or is it just like when?
I think for me, I'm more waiting for the right people, and once you get a lot of coverage, and I think my roommate and even my girl can contest. You want to get it done by people and for reasons that mean something. Like after you fill yourself up, and I fill myself up with so much crap that the space that I do have means something because I want important people and important times in my life to be memorialized, not just bullshit. Like I'm no longer just slapping shit on you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It just gets more important and it's more thought out. I think that's it.
Yeah, you live, you learn, you know, like you.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, every tattoo I have is a notch in a timeline. It's a memory. I'm a walking fucking, you know, scrapbook, but it's at this point the scrapbook in like the pieces that are going into said scrapbook are a little bit more thought out, and I don't need all the little small things from every restaurant I went to.
So that Bennigan's that Bennigan's tattoo on your knee is getting covered up soon, right?
Yeah, exactly. You see my point.
Like, I'm a Chi-Chi's man.
You start off a scrapbook and you put every fucking movie stub of every movie you've ever gone to in it, and then by page 4 you're like, I'm not putting movie stubs in it anymore. I got
right, enough. Right. So Aaron, first off, thank you so much for coming on the show. I'd love to communicate with you in the future and maybe, you know, do something together. I don't know, maybe whatever. But if people want to check you out and people want to communicate with you or see your tattoos or tweet you or something like that, where can they go?
I've got all my social media is linked to just one tagline. It's at Aaron is tattoo.
Great.
Awesome.
Even my email, Aaron is tattoo @gmail.com, my Twitter, my Instagram, Aaron is tattoo. It's easy to find.
That is awesome, man. Thank you so much for coming on. And like no I said, maybe when you have like a project coming up in the future, if you want to come on and promote it a little bit or something like that.
Well, no bullshit. I don't know if you guys are privy to this at all. And I know you watch the season. You know who Emily is, right?
Yes.
Yeah, your rival.
The irony of Emily is that 9 times out of 10, when I'm like a mile down the street at the bar and a friend of mine or somebody sees me and goes, oh my God, is that girl really such a bitch? I just turn over and go, why don't you ask her? She's standing right next to me. There's no bullshit. She lives 2 blocks from here.
Wow.
But we see each other all the time, and that could be a fun thing. If you guys want to do it again, maybe we could bring her in and she could talk shit too.
That would be awesome. Fantastic.
Definitely.
She is an asshole, but I've grown to be fond of her.
That's great. Thank you. Thank you both, Coco and Aaron. And that is one adorable dog. And I wish my dog is. I have a half English bulldog, half beagle somewhere around here.
You can have her.
No.
My room was like, no.
That'd be like the coolest thing, man. Man, I podcast with this guy. I got his dog.
I got a dog.
It's not my dog.
I traded him for a KKK member and a noose. It was weird.
But yeah, like thanks so much for coming on. And this is definitely the first Xbox, like the tracking stuff is crazy. It like follows you around the room. You should do all your interviews like that. Dude, try it again.
Whoa.
That's so fucking crazy.
Who needs a director?
Right? I've got a cameraman in a little box in front of my TV.
Aaron,
let me out.
Thank you guys so much. And we'll be in touch. And it'll probably be up in a week. So we'll send it to you if you could post it on your page. And
fuck yeah, dude. I'd love to. It'd be awesome.
Cheers, brother.
Awesome.
And thank you, Coco. Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Have a good one.
Bye, guys.
Thank you.
So. So I saw the Revenant.
Oh.
And it was un-fucking believable.
Really?
Unbelievable. Probably my favorite movie in a long, long time.
Mm.
Just so badass. Like one of those movies, like I just wanted to get out of there and like put furs on and go roll around in the snow. Like and just like eat wild animals.
Okay.
Leonardo DiCaprio and Tom Hardy. Just absolutely destroy it, like they kill it, and it's really intense. Like it's like, you know, you gotta have a stomach to watch it because it's intense from the start to the finish.
How bloody on a scale of 1 to 10?
Like it's not like cheesy like Tarantino bloody, like no. Where it's just. I mean, I like Tarantino, but you know where the blood's just more like almost a gimmick at some point.
Yeah,
it's like real blood, like. You know, wars with Indians and settlers and a lot of animals. So I'd say an 8 on the bloody scale.
Okay.
An 8 on the blood scale. But it's like more like survival gore, if that makes any sense. Like Leonardo DiCaprio's character. And I'm not giving away too much. But I read a lot about how the film was made. It's pretty freaking remarkable. It was like the biggest pain in the ass. The director from Birdman did it. I don't know if you saw Birdman.
Mm-hmm.
And they did it all in natural light. So okay. They were up near, like, Canada and Montana. And so in the winter, you have shorter days. And then to get the light perfect for shooting, so they had, like, 2-hour days to shoot and stuff like that. And the actors were – people were quitting. Producers were quitting. And they were going over the budget. So they did it all with natural light. No green screen, no nothing. And
the way movies should be,
and it just looks phenomenal. The scenery in it, like it's all. I recommend seeing it on the theater because it's the scenery shots alone are just so big and like you're like holy shit.
I miss that kind of old school. Just let's do it in the environments. Let's do it with the natural stuff. Let's not CGI stuff. Like I was on the internet and I was on YouTube for this Cinema Sins, it's called, where they just go over bad movies and count everything that's wrong with it. And on everybody's list is Episode 1.
Yeah.
And when you re-look at it, you see how much the entire film was pretty much in a green screen, depressing state.
I know.
I mean, say what you want. I mean, I'll add to it how deplorable the script was and where they're going with it. But, I mean, you just look at it, it's just like... You could have made this in computer. Why did you even get freaking characters? Why did you just make this a cartoon?
Yeah. I tried watching, like, it's funny, before when I went to see the new Star Wars, I went out and tried to watch a little bit of the prequel again to remember how different they were. And it's just so much CGI. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's, like, a little dated. The CGI even looks worse, you know? Like, so it's like, ugh.
Oh, yeah. I actually, I was watching an interview. A guy... was interviewing people from the original series, and he talked to the guy who did Jar Jar Binks, and he actually had a story how as they were touring, as they were touring, you know, with the different media stuff, they came, I think it was in Germany, and Michael Jackson was out there.
Ooh.
And, you know, everybody's introduced to Michael Jackson. George Lucas is doing it. He's like, and he's Jar Jar. And Michael's like, oh. And he got like this weird snub, and he thought it was weird.
Mm-hmm.
And he went up to George a little later, and he's like, why did you just introduce me as Jar Jar? You introduce everybody else as their real names. You call me Jar Jar. He's like, well, when I was, you know, figuring out the film, he was one of the shortlisted to play Jar Jar. And he wanted to do it in, like, real costumes as a character.
Uh-huh.
But George insisted on it being CGI.
Oh, George, he really missed the boat on that one. But
the funny thing is, the guy who did the voice actually was the character itself. They put on the motion detectors on him, so as he moves around, right. And they do the animation.
I have a friend that does that, stop motion. It's pretty cool. That's his job. He does, like, stop motion stuff all the time. But back to The Revenant. Now, The Revenant, hands down, one of my favorite movies. I actually would love to see it again. I love Star Wars and all that, but this was a totally different type of movie.
Yeah, I'd definitely go see it.
Just pure. If DiCaprio doesn't get the Oscar for this one, something's rigged. It's amazing how that guy could have gone. He could have got, like, after Titanic, he could have gone the complete wrong way. You know, he could have done all these
Cuba Gooding Jr.
All these girl movies, like where he's the heartthrob,
mm-hmm.
And that guy just went the complete right way. Movie after movie, he is great in.
Well, I think one of the best things that happened to him was he was sick of Hollywood. Like, mm-hmm. He literally just said, "I don't want to deal with stuff." He kind of went to his own. I mean, if you remember, he kind of went on a lull after Titanic, and he kind of came back with Wolf of Wall Street.
Well,
and
I think you missed about 10 movies.
But I mean, the point is, he came back and he basically said, "I picked that. I picked that. I picked that." The Django Unchained. I mean, he was phenomenal on that. I mean,
Gangs in New York, mm-hmm. The Departed. Aviator? Mm-hmm. Catch Me If You Can.
Yeah.
Shutter Island.
It's insane.
It's like hit after hit, like. You know, whether you like some more than others, obviously, but he's ridiculous, man. He's so good.
He's a pure actor. Like, you literally would just sit down and be like, how the hell do you get into that mindset? It's just, it's something where if you can just get a grab bag and, like, pull out, like, five different characteristics and just, like, all these things, and you are a turnip farmer. Okay. No problem. I'll be back in 2 months as a gay, happy, dancing turnip farmer.
Why does a turnip farmer have to be gay?
It's the movie. I didn't make the movie.
Oh, it's a role.
Yeah.
You know, I heard you were auditioning for the role of the gay turnip farmer.
I gave it a shot, man. I mean, I wanted to get into the business, and I said to myself, I love the earth. I can learn to love men.
Mm-hmm.
I can't really learn how to dance. That's how I lost the damn role.
Interesting, because we have tapes here of you auditioning as the gay turnip farmer.
Really?
Yeah. Let's let's go to the tape here. All right, actor number one. This is gay turnip farmer in the corral. Speaking to his horses about why his turnips won't grow. And action!
Girls, it's been a long, long spring. The waters have not come through. Our turnip crops have not shown the way of the world.
Be more gay!
But you have to remember, if you have faith, and where we're going, if you love the land as much as I love my men, we can make this happen.
Tell the horse why the turnips are so great.
There's nothing better than a nice, huge, juicy turnip.
Cut! Wow.
Yeah.
Berlo, you nailed that.
Yeah. I can't believe so.
I think your first, at the beginning, you forgot he was gay.
Yeah, well, I tried to... You know, I didn't think they wanted stereotypical, but they're like, no, let's go for it.
Right.
And I was shocked, and I went for it.
You didn't get the part, though.
Spielberg is very weird like that. I mean, he is very particular in who he wants in his gay.
I'm looking forward to that, though. Christian Bale is going to kill that role.
I know, man. I mean, he's definitely the Batman and the gay turnip man.
So yeah,
that wasn't that bad for improv for me.
Yeah, whatever you said. The Revenant, right? This is one of those things where you were just saying, like, how does he get into that mode to do it? Mm-hmm. Like, when you – and there, I read about, like, you know, how cold it was, and they made the actor – and the director had an awesome point. He said, if I do a green screen and call everyone's sipping coffee and waiting around, they're not going to be miserable, and they're not going to have that survival look on them. They're not – he's like, this was going to be a hard movie. I knew it from the beginning, and they knew what they were getting into. And just the role – DiCaprio said it was like the hardest movie he's ever done in his life. And when you see it, you'd be like, I 100% agree. Now.
Harder than his role in Growing Pains.
Now, the bear scene.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. No secret. He gets attacked by a bear. Okay.
Yeah,
it's on the
commercial.
So I'm not
throwing
any spoilers. Maybe the most, one of the most intense and iconic scenes I can remember in a movie. Like, you're feeling like you're being attacked by a bear. Okay. Now, how they did it is still kind of like I read some, you know, I like to do that when it's a, especially when it's a movie that's kind of based on some kind of historical facts. I like to go back and kind of see, you know, what's real and what's not, yeah. And how they did things.
That's why
really
I research Police
now,
Academy
not,
5.
It's definitely not a real bear, mm-hmm. But how they did it and the way it looks, it makes you feel like you're like just tense while you're watching it. And it's ridiculous, and I don't know. It just and that sets the tone for like the whole movie. Is the bear actually the, right from the first scene sets the tone?
Mm-hmm.
But the bear scene, like I love bears, man. I know I've talked about this once before. How I went to see Disney's Bears.
Yeah, the gay turnip farmer. He liked bears too.
Yeah, different
kind
of bears.
I didn't get to that role.
Yeah, different kind of bears. We got that clip somewhere.
Maybe
else.
Later. Maybe later.
But I love bears. In fact, it inspired me to try to work. Trying to align a guest. No longer going to hide guests from you guys and what's going on with the podcast. Who cares?
It's Jim McMahon.
I'm trying to get, it's the Orphan Animal Sanctuary. It's up in New York. And they have like 11 orphan bears. And one of them is a 1,500-pound Kodiak like grizzly bear. And
I think he can live without parents. I'm just throwing it out
his
there.
His name is Jimbo. No, when they're orphan, a cub's with their mom for like 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So you can just take care of yourself if you're a bear?
I think so. I think I can make it happen.
You like bears too, right, Burlo?
Of course.
Well, we're going to take it a little extreme here. Like, I love bears so much that I'm going to put you to what I call like almost like a bear triathlon. We got a lot of different categories on bears.
Bum, 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 bum.
We got bear stories. We got bear quizzes. We have what kind of bear would you be?
All right, very well. Now, I got my potpourri questions for you.
We also have bear jokes, Burlo. A couple of bear jokes. So where would you like to – also have a bear news story. It's like bear – you know. I got a little inspired. so I went a little nuts. So where would you like
That's
to start?
Cool. Let us go with the bear news story.
All right, bear news story. I think you'll like this. This guy kind of could have went with one of our dirtbag of the weeks.
Oh.
So a man dressed in a bear costume harasses grizzlies.
How'd that turn out?
He flees the scene without removing his outfit. Every year, Haines locals and tourists gather along the Chilcook River banks to watch grizzly bears feast on pink salmon swimming upstream to their breeding grounds. August 11th, visitors saw something a little strange. A man dressed as a bear trying to convince the grizzlies he was one of them. At first, onlookers thought the man, who was jumping up and down just 10 feet from a feeding mother bear and her cubs, was one of the animals. Soon, however, they noticed the costume and alerted local police and fish and wildlife workers. When fish and wildlife officials attempted to question him, he refused to answer, fled the scene without removing his outfit. Officers took down his license plate number, and Alaska State Troopers are investigating the incident. The motive of this mystery man is unknown, but it's safe to say that he's not the smartest way to view a grizzly bear.
You know what was the key thing? He was wearing that Yogi Bear hat.
Yes, yes, yes.
He did.
Chicago Bears jersey. So, I mean...
I wish bears could talk.
Remember that documentary, like Grizzly Man? Or
yeah.
Where he follow a bunch of bears. He's like, I'm part of their family, man. And then at the end, he gets eaten.
And it worked for a while. He was with them for like 3 months, I think, before it happened.
Well,
I think him and his girlfriend got mauled.
Well, I can't say I'm sad.
So we're going to meet that bear.
Well, there is a chance we might meet that bear. Okay. So, again, so bear inspiration. Mm. Okay, the bear necessities here. Throw your bear pun out there, and I'm good. What do you want to hear about? You want to hear about jokes? You want to take a quiz?
I want to take a quiz.
All right. All right, bro. I know, man. I got some problems. It's all right.
Oh, that's fun.
What kind of bear are you, Berlu? Let's find out.
Mm. Okay.
Which word best describes your personality? Calm,
nope.
Shy, affectionate, independent, or powerful?
I guess shy.
Ooh, shy bear. Yeah. That's not what I heard in the bedroom.
Mm.
I heard you're more of an aggressive bear. What's your ideal snack? Okay. A handful of blackberries, wheatgrass shot, salad, hamburger, or sushi?
I do sushi a lot. I'm going to go sushi.
Sushi. Okay. What are you most likely to be wearing? A color-blocked sweater.
Okay.
Glasses.
Uh-huh.
Dark suit. Scarf. Or sweatshirt?
Sweatshirt.
Yeah, definitely sweatshirt. Okay. Dark suit would be, maybe that would be a cool look for you. What's your ideal vacation activity? Is it camping, mountain climbing, bobsledding, going to a museum, or relaxing on the beach? I know one that kind of, I think of you. I've done it a few times.
I would say museum.
Mm-hmm. I think a museum, the aquariums, the this
yeah.
and that.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm an inquisitive bear.
In your free time, you most likely like to take a nap, go ice skating, dance the night away, go swimming, or take a hike.
Take a hike.
All right. Okay. Why isn't let me take a hike?
If it won't allow it, my second answer is nap.
Okay, here we go. All right. Who are you in high school? Class president,
no.
Artist, star athlete, newspaper editor, or debater?
I wasn't any of those things.
You were the mass debater.
Oh, you. What were the five again?
Class president, artist, star athlete, newspaper editor, or debater? You can't choose.
Yeah, I guess the closest I could come to anything, I guess artist.
Artist. All right, last question. What's your life motto? Bigger, faster, stronger. Wild and free. Where there's a will, there's a way. Life teaches, love reveals. The higher you climb, the better you view.
What was the second one again?
Wild and free.
Let's go with that.
Ooh, essential. Are you ready for your results?
I think I could take it.
All right, Berlo. You are 39% Andean Bear. Andean Bear, you like to entertain others.
Yeah.
You're unique, and you have mm-hmm. your own distinct style.
That's totally the Michael Berlu bear.
Now you're 26% black bear. Okay.
Yeah.
You're 1% brown bear. You're not a fan of the browns.
What 26%
can I say? Polar bear, a tie between
Ooh.
Black and polar bear.
Ooh.
And you're 8% panda bear.
Okay.
All right. So you're 39% Andean bear.
I love my heritage.
So, Berlu, you were saying you came across a bear.
Yeah, when I was walking in the pass with a friend of mine, I think we were about 4.5 miles into our hike, and she was hearing noises. I was hearing the same thing, and choking around and all. I'm like, wouldn't it be funny if it was like a bear or something? She's like, shut up. There's like wild animals out here. And no later than a couple minutes after I said that, we see a big brown bear jetting probably, if I had to guess, about 300 feet in front of us.
Uh-huh.
And it was darting in the opposite direction. It was darting up to the rose, and it almost got hit directly by a car. And all. It was a little scary thing, but it was just a weird little. I mean, you always joke about, there's bears out here, blah, blah, blah. But when they're 300 feet away, you kind of get that, okay, I'm going to shut the hell up now.
Yeah, I had a few comments. I was literally trying to read our freaking Twitter thing. A few experiences, bear. Once I was driving in the Poconos, not driving in the Poconos, I was camping in the Poconos at it's like trailers, campgrounds. And I was driving a golf cart, and a huge bear just walks across. Thank you. I just got a PBA card from my sister.
Mm.
Very nice. So a huge bear just walks right across, like maybe 20 feet in front of me. Huge, like the height of the golf cart.
Yeah.
And I just sit on the brakes. I'm like,
hello there.
Second one, when I was in Alaska, we were by this glacier, and they said, you know, bears are around. Bear definitely was not afraid of humans, just walked by humans, and we're like freaking following it like idiots. I'm like, oh, this is cool, like I'm following it, like me and some other guy. And so that was another experience with a bear.
And you never saw that other guy.
You were at my house, bears all the time, bear cubs in the back.
Mm-hmm.
I remember looking out one time on the deck, bear cubs climbing up the tree, which is, you know, you hear bears climbing, but when you actually see them climb and how freaking agile they are, it's like, oh man. Those things, they just would maul you.
Yeah.
But they are powerful. They are awesome. And they are just, I don't know. I always love bear. I even have this bear tattoo idea.
Okay.
But anyway. So, Berlo, now we know that you're mostly an Andean bear. Maybe let's lighten the mood a little bit. How about a couple bear jokes?
Well,
are you into bear jokes?
I'm into any joke.
Can you bear it?
Is that one of them?
All right. All right, here's a good one.
All right.
What do polar bears eat for lunch?
What?
Icebergs. Oh! Oh, shit!
But wait, Hack-A-Lantern, how'd you get in here?
Go away. What do you call a bear with no teeth?
What?
A bear. Gummy bear. Oh, man. Now I understand why no one's following us on Periscope.
Tonight on the station.
All right, this one's good. What do you call bears with no ears?
No ears. Hmm. What?
B.
Ba-dum-bum.
That's a good one. That's a good one. All right, one more bear joke.
All right.
What color socks do bears wear?
What?
They don't wear socks, silly. They have bare feet.
Oh!
Zing! Boo, 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 boo.
You're on fire tonight, Scotty.
Woo. You know, like, when I plan these podcasts, I think of, like, what would really capture audiences around the world.
And that's why you brought me on, right?
Yeah, yeah. And that's why I talk about bears a lot. All right, Berlo, let's see how much you think you know about bears.
All right.
You always claim you're the bear expert of the two of us.
What can I say, man?
You're always like, I'm the bear man. I'm the king. I'm the bear king.
I didn't even tell you my name at first. I just yelled that in your face the first time we met.
I'm Berlo.
Oh!
Woo! Woo!
Hack-A-Lantern, get the hell out of here.
Woo! Oh, God, people. It's okay. There's a lot of good podcasts out there. Now what podcast good? Road Rash. Go do them. All right. Anyway.
Just put us in the background of the good podcast.
Where do bears live, Berlu? North of the equator, along the equator, or south of the equator?
I would say north of the equator.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Come on.
Considering we're north of the equator, and I've seen a bear.
Was that your thinking process? Like, is that was?
Yeah.
There was 12 more steps
if you'd like me to go through it.
What is the largest type of bear? Polar bears, Kodiak bears, or black bears?
I'm going to say Kodiak.
Correct. Kodiak bears are the largest, weighing in sometimes around 1,700 pounds.
Woo!
Reaching 10 to 12 feet.
What'd I tell you?
You know what the smallest type of bear? It's called a Malay bear. 60 to 100 pounds. Perfect pet.
Aww.
I would love to get a pet. pet bear.
Obi, you're gone.
Obi and a bear playing around. That'd be awesome.
And then
what
just
is the
bear.
Bear's strongest sense? Hearing, sight, or smell?
Smell.
Berlu, correct.
Mm-hmm.
They have poor eyesight and poor hearing. Okay,
yep.
Which aids them, but it their smell ridiculous aids them in hunting, ripping apart Leonardo DiCaprio. Awesome.
You said no spoilers.
Bears love honey and tear apart bees' nests to access it. Which is the only part of the bear's body that is unprotected from bee stings? Ooh. Its nose, its ears, or its fingers? Fingers.
Yeah, I don't think it's fingers. So what's left, the nose or the ears?
The only part unprotected from bee stings, nose or ears?
Gotta be nose.
A bear is well protected from bee stings by its thick fur and the nose. The only unprotected part is its nose. Aside from honey, bears also eat fish, small mammals, fruit, roots, seeds, insects.
Did you say Fruit Loops?
No. No, I did not. We also have an audition tape of when you tried to be the bear that ate Fruit Loops. Rawr! That's my lucky charms! Rawr!
I don't know why they went with Toucan Sam. I'm so pissed. My acting was perfect.
How are sun bears different from other bears? Sun bears. They are distinctive marking on their chest. They have a distinctive marking on their chest. They have shaggy fur, or they have red fur.
Now this is
where
the big boys play. Yeah. Not just any bear expert can get these questions. Mm-mm. Only the prime ones. Can I go through my choices one more time?
Yes, they have distinctive marking on their chest. They have shaggy fur, or they have red fur.
I am going with A.
A, distinctive marking on their chest, is correct, Berlu. They are different because of their short fur, which is not shaggy like other bears. They also have white or yellow marking on their chest.
If you're a bear out there, I know about you.
I got you, honey.
You can't fool me.
What's the most common bear in North America, browns, grizzlies, or blacks?
Brown.
Sorry, Berlu.
What?
I'm sorry.
Did the numbers change on me?
The black bear is the most common bear, okay? Which is why they're freaking hunting them. The bear hunt in New Jersey is ridiculous. Yes, it's the bear's fault that you put your garbage in the street when we build in the middle of the forest.
Yeah.
It's their fault.
Exactly.
It's their fault.
They knew what was coming.
Yeah. If they didn't want that pot pie that you threw out, they shouldn't have come near my garbage.
If
I might as well kill them.
If they just watched CNN, they would have understood. Yeah.
Hello, hello.
Oh, my goodness. Is it our good friend AJ Mattioli?
It is, my friend. It is.
Shit. What's up? How you doing?
I'm pretty good, man. I'm doing great over here. Really great.
Oh, I miss that New York accent so bad, and it's so good to hear from you. And well, hopefully we're going to be here.
My New York accent should be pretty deep. I was working on set today with some of the boys that were in the Bronx Tale, so I've been with Bronx boys all day.
Nice.
So AJ, for people who haven't heard the episode, AJ is a, LGBT film director. He's done a lot of cool projects and stuff like that. And she's going to be he's going to be checking in with us for the next, for a while, like maybe once a month, every couple weeks.
Yeah, I would love it.
What's really cool about it is, AJ, you're going through a transition, correct?
I am. I'm transitioning from being female-bodied to being a male.
All right.
It's pretty exciting. It's a long process, pretty much, as most guys do, you change, as the days and years go on, but it's going to be a fascinating time, and I'm excited to be sharing that with you guys and your listeners.
Yeah, I think it's, I contacted you, a couple weeks ago when you put on Facebook, and also after we talked, I thought it would be fascinating because you don't usually... whether you watch a documentary piece or you watch a movie or something like that on the topic, you don't usually get like the check-ins, like, hey, this is what's going on. Like, this is how I feel. This is the medical stuff that's going on. This is the emotional side to it. So I think it'd be really, like, interesting for people to hear how that goes, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be – it's funny because, you know, you use the word, you know, hear how it goes. And then really, you're going to hear changes in my voice.
Yeah.
Relatively quickly, and it's gonna get sadly it's gonna I'm pretty much gonna go through puberty again. You know, I thought once was enough, but we'll do it twice, and my voice is
all
gonna
right.
crack.
So
and
if you want to go through real male puberty like I did, you have to wear JNCOs that don't fit.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get a bowl haircut, and you got to be really really into Wayne's World and 311.
You know, I fit most of those categories already. The 90s was terrible.
Stop it. Would you rather grow up in the 80s?
What did we wear?
We had good music, at least.
Oh, there's no need for those outfits.
All right. Well, was there any need for most generations' mm-hmm. outfits?
No, but we could, like, literally hide small children pants legs. Like, it was ridiculous.
I'm not gonna lie, I never had the supersized JNCOs. My brother did. I kind of have like the baggy ones, but he had like the stupid ones where exactly, like, you know, if you want to help the homeless, you just let him kind of
you had the
go
double
under.
XL, he had the quadruple XL.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. And you know, I think it was such an interesting time to grow up in the 90s because, you know, every generation has your gender queer people, you know. But the 90s was just like, even like the most feminine girls wore just baggy clothing. Like, It was fantastic for me.
Yeah, see, it
I was
sucked
like, so
for
I
us.
I get to wear this and be good looking? Okay.
She could be good looking. Yeah, I'm not really 100% sure.
I mean, we were almost like Middle East. We were almost Burka style there for a while.
Yeah.
Like, you can go to like a casino and bet on. I think she's got a good body on there. I'm gonna put 10 on it. Damn it!
Oh, God, that's great.
All right, AJ. So let's first off, before we even get into that, through you, we went through some cool experiences. We went to David Bolito's concert in New York, Upper West Side there.
Yeah, yeah.
Fantastic!
Fantastic!
We actually met Bill Nye. He was sitting four seats away from me.
Get out of here. Uh-huh.
I'm not. And I'm trying to get him on the podcast. We'll see if that happens.
Hey, you know, you never know. Some people, he'll get bored on a Wednesday night and be like, you know what? Let me call up Verbal Shenanigans. Yeah.
I want to get like Bill Nye, like he's hammered, like, I'm ready. I'm doing an experiment in the garage.
Listen, this gravity thing, we made it up, us smart people. Doesn't exist.
Scam. All right. But yeah, so we did that, and we've been in touch with you, and we're still waiting to come out to that drag show. One of these days we're going to do a podcast.
Yeah, totally.
So
we got to get that scheduled.
But also, thank you. You put us on your newsletter. I saw that. That was cool.
Yeah, no problem. It was a really fun, you know, podcast, and I was really excited when you asked me to do, you know, updates on my, you know, on my transition, just because I had a really good time last time, and I felt that, you know, it was an informative conversation as well as entertaining, you know, and that's always the best of both worlds.
That's what we try to do. We can't always be entertaining, but we will be informative.
I can't.
All right, so give us the lowdown here. So you went for your first, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, your first testosterone shot, correct?
Yes, it's on January 4th. I was able to... the Callen Lord Center, which is a great facility in Manhattan, you pretty much meet with a counselor and they kind of talk you through the steps, explain to you what's going to happen, and you signed what's called an informed consent saying, like, yes, I'm aware that I might go bald, which would be very sad, but, you know, I'm aware that that's going to happen. I'm aware that once my voice lowers, if I decide to stop taking testosterone, it won't ever sound like this again. You have to pretty much sign that.
And why is that? Because it, like, lengthens the vocal cords?
Exactly. It pretty much builds muscles around the female vocal cords.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Hopefully I won't have a giant Adam's apple and just a normal But, you know, you take what you can get. So on January 4th, they had me sign that. They took my blood levels because when you're transitioning you know, female to male, you're then, you know, prone to all the cancers and risks that men are more prone to than females.
Okay.
So, you know, they take, you know, my cholesterol and all that. And then once that's done, pretty much you meet with a very, you know, a wonderful nurse who's done this a million times, and they start teaching you how to do your first shot, which is in your thigh. It's in your upper quadrant of your thigh.
Now, how often will you be taking this? Like, is it daily or weekly or?
It's actually, I thought it was going to be a lot more than it is. It's actually once every 2 weeks.
Oh, okay.
And then after that, it'll be, after like 6 months, it'll be just once a month, and I'll be able
really?
To. Really? Yeah, wow. And I'll be able to do it myself. And,
that's some strong shit.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. It's pretty, I mean, like within, you know, the first month, my voice will, you know, be slowly dropping and breaking and then kind of settle into itself. In
hi, guys.
Yeah. Exactly.
The breaking part's the worst. I'll never forget being in class, like talking to a girl and be like, hey, hey, Erica, you want to go to the dance with me? It's not cool.
He was 22 at the time. Very weird.
It actually was last week. No.
Talking to his students.
He's still waiting with his, you know, for his prom date to show up. It's okay.
She loves me, I swear.
She's just late for the last 12 years.
She got lost. She lived far away.
Okay.
So yeah, I'll be taking that shot, and you know, slowly but surely, like you know, my body will be changing. The longer you're on testosterone, the more manly you get. Yeah. You know, and with the hopes of, you know, for me, not everybody thinks that, you know, quote unquote passing, and that means like passing as that gender, is necessarily important.
Right.
But for me, I just, you know, for me, it's important because I'm out of 34, I'm tired of being called ma'am and lady, and it's just weird.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I wanted to get to that point, like emotionally, this has to be highly emotional for you in so many ways, you know, like, as far as anticipation, as far as I'm finally doing this, as far as, you know, there's got to be some nervousness because it is medical when it comes down to it, too. And
I mean, when push
tell us about your emotions.
A little bit, you know, I'm shallow. I mean, I'll never say that I'm not, you know, and my biggest concerns, foolishly, I'll admit, my biggest concerns is if I'm going to go bald and, you know, and yeah, pretty much if I'm going to go bald. That's like a really big concern.
Hi, Hair Club for Men. I'm in a little weird spot right now. We got to talk about this. I don't know which direction you need to put this on me.
Exactly. I'm just going to start getting hair plugs. As they fall out, I'm just going to start getting filling them with hair plugs.
Listen. You want to become a man, you got to deal with that. We all are worried about that.
It's not the cancer. It's not the high risk of blood pressure. Not the high cholesterol.
It's so funny. It's so funny. I saw pictures of myself the other night, and like, you know, it was in a casino, so it had like really like those bright lights up top, and I looked like I was starting to get the horseshoe. Like I was balding. I'm like, no. No, please, no. Please, no. I'm like, it's got to be the lights. I'm like, it's probably not the lights.
It's not the lights, man.
Where's your manager? I need to get Sylvania's up there.
So
100 watts.
So your family's got to be, you know, I'm like, I would be, you know, you're past the acceptance phase and all that. You said that on our last interview. So they got to be excited for you. This is something that you've wanted.
Yeah. I mean, actually, not even surprised. Surprisingly, but wonderfully enough, my father came with me at 34. I'm
great.
Still very, I'm very close to my family, and I asked my dad to come with me and just kind of, you know, be there for me. So I wouldn't, you know, I was excited, but there's still the fear, you know, of like what's happening, what's gonna happen. So he came and really sat down with me while I got the shot and did the whole nine yards and waited in the waiting room that was full of transgender people and homosexuals and
nice.
Sat there waiting for me.
Now, can we podcast from there?
Can you podcast from there? I don't know about all that.
Hey, guys. We're
here. I'll
wear
a gown.
So now, do you think in your like in your head, I bet you you want to go from like 0 to 100 quickly, like go right, like get this done with, like you want to go from, you probably want to go from female to doing like Rocky IV, like sit ups off the barn in the snow.
Well, I will say my father was very funny. I kept on teasing him, saying that like I was gonna get the shot and come home looking like, you know, a lumberjack. and like, you know, he obviously knew that wasn't gonna happen, but I kind of saw his face when they first put the needle in, like almost looking at me to see if he could notice something right away. Yeah. And I just keep on telling him, everyone's like, "Oh, your mustache is getting a little darker." I'm like, "No, I'm just Italian."
Now, when you got that first shot, I mean, was there an initial feeling, as in internally?
You go from excitement to pain really quick.
She went, "Holy shit, if I get a divorce, I have nothing because it's all taken away."
This hurts. I'm going to just say a chick, you know?
I was like, this shit hurts.
If she ever gets a divorce, she'd be like, I'm a girl.
I'm a girl.
Give me the house.
I instantly just have an apron on. I'm cooking. Oh my God, that might be the most sexist thing I've ever said.
Oh, stop.
Well, you're a man. You gotta start doing this stuff.
Yeah, you're a man now.
First comes the testosterone, then comes the lack of communication. My fear of commitment. You know,
AJ, I haven't heard you in 4 days. Nah, don't cover me up. What the hell, man?
No, 100%. It's, you know, I'm looking forward to the ZZ Top stage, but, you know, I'm all right now. You know, again, I have such a supportive family, supportive friends. Like, you know, they've been calling me by AJ for a very long time. And,
great.
You know, I mean, and that's not the case, you know, in most families. I mean, the fact of the matter is, you know, the homeless situation for LGBT kids is out of control. And within that, you know, that third of the homeless people of being LGBT, you know, a lot of them are trans, and, you know, being kicked out of your home is a normal thing. And sadly, you know, if you talk to almost any kid down by the West 4th area that's homeless, they're trans, you know.
Wow.
A lot of them, you know, people always look at prostitutes like they're, you know, morally bankrupt, and that's just not the case. The fact of the matter is, like, a lot of these transgender kids do what's called survival sex, and that's just having sex in order to have a place to sleep.
Wow.
You know, so I always, you know, as much as I kid and joke around and, you know, I say how amazing my transitioning is, you know, I think it's very important to note that my transition is, you know, physically is the same as others, but not emotionally the same as the majority, which, you know, is what Caitlyn Jenner should be saying also.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And now, as a filmmaker, are you thinking about doing any kind of documentary about this whole experience?
There was a part of me that kind of wanted to. I think, though, I want to do almost like a freebie where I just every once in a while film myself on my iPhone, putting on Mattioli Productions Facebook page and website, and, you know, just kind of let people watch that happen without, you know, I mean, I always have a, you know, if you feel like making a contribution, hit this tab, you know, people always welcome to donate to Mattioli. But, you know, I think it's because of most of my fan base happens to be, my personal fan base happens to be heterosexuals, I think it's kind of nice and important that they kind of see these, and if it's free and it's in their face and I'm sharing it, they will watch it, you know, and kind of understand the process a little more.
That's great. I'm telling you, side note, a documentary on the homeless problem in transgendered is a hell of an idea.
Yeah.
That I think would be, you know, really eye-opener kind of thing.
Yeah, no, 100%. We're actually, for my last documentary, Words, I interviewed the owner of the Alay Fournay Center, which is a center for homeless LGBT youth which houses about 250 kids a night.
Wow.
But they have they have to turn away about 1,000 kids a night.
Wow.
So even though they're housing 250, they still have to turn away like 1,000 a night. Wow. Like, which is just, you know, and we're talking about New York City. We're not even talking about the country. We're talking about,
yeah,
you know, 20-mile radius. Yeah. Like, it's insanity. So, yeah, I think that, you know, and the survival sex and things. I mean, there's so many different ways that, you know, a documentary can cover this in a positive light and in a way that people want to watch it,
be
and want to see, like,
be
how
aware.
They can be, you know, and give them the availability to donate to causes that will help these kids. Yeah.
All
and
right.
Maybe just, you know, get rid of some of these freaking teabaggers and stop making kids feel like shit about themselves.
All right. Well, AJ. Go ahead, bro.
Well, as AJ is transitioning, I know you've lived your life in your mind being a male, but I still feel, since you were technically a female, you're transitioning over, us guys need to help you out. So I went onto a website with the 20 things men do that women probably don't know about. So obviously, just because you were a female technically, I have to help you out. So,
I appreciate it.
So I'm going to just give you a couple of quick ones right here.
All right. I'm sure that it's going to be very interesting information that's going to advance my transitioning.
Yeah, well, it's from tickle.com, so I mean, that's my main source for manlyhood. I just want to tell you a couple things. Number one, flush mid-pee and race the toilet when you go to the bathroom. Very key.
Very key.
Very key as a man. Fantasizing about your female friends. Yes, all of them. Every single one of them.
Covered. Check.
Yep. Checked online to see if your length is adequate. You got to make sure about that. I mean, you're getting one pre-built, so you got to make sure if you had to go back to the doctor.
Sadly, right now, I'm looking like I got the Irish curse. So
yeah, it happens.
Looked at their poop when they finish. I mean, sometimes you just need to enjoy the masterpiece that you created.
I always wanted to, like, find a way to mount mine above my fireplace.
Well, it would melt. I mean, that's
no,
the biggest problem.
I mean, if they can cast an animal, they can cast that. Anyway.
While peeing, try to cover entire surface of water with pee bubbles.
Oh.
That's very key. That's what us do. And one final one for us guys, delete your search history. Always got to remember that when somebody comes over. Make sure.
Yes.
100%. I will have more as you keep on checking in with us to help you out.
All right.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with little person porn. I'm proud to not clear my search history.
All right, AJ. So we will be checking in with you from time to time.
I love it. I
love it.
It
too. I think it's great. And I think it's great to, you know, hear this side of things. I mean, I find it fascinating and whatnot.
Very intriguing.
But again, we have 25 seconds here. Where do we go to check you out real quick if people didn't hear the first podcast? Go.
MattioliProductions.com.
MattioliProductions.com. Say hi. Give her a little Facebook follow. Ask her questions. He's putting up his own videos and through the process. So you listen to this, say hi and whatnot. And thanks so much, AJ.
Look forward to this.
All right, Michael Berlow, I don't really know what to say. This episode was fantastic. I mean,
so many different directions.
I was just going to say, I don't think you could get a more random. Our last episode was Brewer, butt chugging, and baseball cards. That was pretty random.
Yeah.
Today we went with Bears.
Bears.
Tattoo artists.
Gay turnip
transitioning.
Farmer.
The gay turnip farmer. So all in all, when stuff like that happens, it's a good night. So a fantastic episode. I'll stop with my bear stuff. I think we got the point, but I had a good time doing that. So, Berlew, anything to promote?
Sometime in February, I'm figuring out the date, I will be on Saison and Netphones, DWildMusicRadio.com. Those guys put on a great show. Scott was on there a few weeks back. Can't wait to join those guys and have a little fun.
Yes, and... two things. One thing we failed to mention, This Saturday, Michael Burley, you're up 5-0 in the Verbal Shenanigans Challenge Showdown.
That's correct.
But I may be taking a big swing at that this weekend because we should be LARPing this weekend. So look forward to that podcast.
Should be very interesting.
Not only am I hope to participate, but I have scheduled a whole podcast at the event. So look forward to listening to that. I'm excited about that.
Absolutely.
And as far as promoting, I'm going to promote two things. I'm going to promote myself. January 23rd, I am doing the 8-minute dating comedy show at the Cabana Grill.
Ah.
Where a male and a female comic are paired together. They get 8 minutes to riff on something. So we'll see how that goes. That could be great or awful, but that is down at the Cabana Grill in Little Ferry, and there's 16 comics on, so
nice.
Come on down to that. And I want to promote, before we even get them on, I mean, who cares? They're a good cause. I want to promote the, I want to make sure I get their name correct, the Orphaned Wildlife Center, where they rescue all sorts of orphaned animals, especially bears. And like it goes well with this podcast. So with that, I want to thank Aaron Is. I want to thank AJ Mattioli. And I'd like to thank myself for putting up with you.
I'd like to thank the gay turnip farmer for coming back.
Gay turnip farmer is way better than the gardener. He's like the evolution of the gardener. He's like the modern day.
Yeah.
It's more accepted now. Mm-hmm. But
when that sequel comes out, man, you'll love me.
Please, if you guys can leave a review for us, that helps so much because it makes the podcast get more populated.
Mm-hmm.
But follow us at VS Comedy. Come to the Verbal Shenanigans Comedy Show on the 21st.
Follow us up on Periscope.
And all that fun stuff, Periscope, all that stuff. And thank you. Life is funny, people. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back.
And you're going to love the way they tickle.
Move me. Look out.
The bare necessities of life will come to you.
What's where?
They'll come to you. Look for the bare necessities, the simple bare necessities. Forget about your worries and your strife. I mean the bare necessities. That's why a bear can rest at ease with just the bare necessities of life. Now when you pick a pawpaw or a prickly pear,
ow!
And you prick a raw paw, well next time beware. Don't pick